You okay, pal? Are you a pet? No. You're not a pet. I'm your father.
What is Caesar?
Welcome to part 2 of the Planet of the Apes series. I'm Nick Nyland, and this is Keynotes. Each episode, I examine the innovative ways music is used in film. Just a warning in advance that this episode will contain spoilers for Rise of the Planet of the Apes, because talking about the plot is necessary to understand the context of the music. On the previous episode, we talked about Jerry Goldsmith's score for the original 1968 Planet of the Apes. And we gave some history. Planet of the Apes was part of a new wave of post-war film scores that pushed the envelope, getting away from traditional symphonic scores and embracing jazz and experimental music techniques. In Apes, Goldsmith took the concept of a world upside down and ran with it. The score is intentionally disorienting, making our experience frantic and confusing. He used unfamiliar ethnic instruments and non-musical objects as instruments. Some of the orchestra was processed through effects, specifically the Echoplex tape delay, giving a touch of the futuristic to an otherwise primitive and tribal-sounding musicscape. The score leaves the listener with little to latch onto. It's not meant to connect to us emotionally, or at least it's not working hard to make us feel, say, moved to tears. If anything, it's cynical and remote, just like Charlton Heston's character.
I'm a seeker, too. But my dreams aren't like yours. I can't help thinking somewhere in the universe there has to be something better than man. Has to be.
And we've arrived at one of the key differences between the original film and this new trilogy. While there's still plenty of suffering to go around, our new series champions sympathy and compassion amidst all the adversity. It sees a constant tug of war between humanity's dual nature, but consistently goodwill pushes its way to the surface. It very much embraces what Goldsmith was rejecting in 1968, the cathartic emotional score. The trilogy, beginning with 2011's Rise of the Planet of the Apes, tells the origin story of the apes and their relationship with mankind. These films feature Caesar as the central character, a chimpanzee who becomes hyper-intelligent as a result of an experimental drug. Much of the first film deals with Caesar's sense of identity and struggle to find a purpose. He's trapped between two worlds, more intelligent than his fellow simians, but still seen as a pet or a beast by many of the humans. These prequels continue the theme of humanity, what it means to be human. As the apes get smarter and develop language, they begin to become human and capable of all the good and bad that comes with it. The apes at their early stages of advanced intelligence communicate with sign language, so there are long visual passages where no dialogue is being spoken. Therefore, the musicians, Doyle and Giacchino, have extra work to do to communicate what's going on to the audience. Rise of the Planet of the Apes was directed by Rupert Wyatt, and the music, composed by Patrick Doyle, is strikingly different than Goldsmith. Much of it is a pulsing, driving action score. We'll be right back. better or for worse, this kind of bombastic thrumming seems to have become a bit of a trend with the modern blockbuster. Here's Batman Begins by Hans Zimmer and James Newton Howard. Here's Transformers by Steve Jablonski. And John Powell, the Bourne Ultimatum. And back to another track on Rise of the Planet of the Apes. To be fair, despite the similarity in all these tracks, there are subtle and important differences, which is what we'll get into. Okay, full disclosure, this was a score that I dismissed on first listen, lumping it in with some of the boilerplate scores that have taken over a lot of these mainstream action films. But when I dug a little deeper, I found it was much more complex. Patrick Doyle introduces to the saga the element of the choir, the concept of voice, which will become so important thematically to the series. The choral element, performed by an African choir, often manifests itself as a kind of tribal chanting, linking us to the apes' homeland. The chorus is often guttural, and it's given to us in a surprising range of moods. The flute's also adding to the tribal flavor here. Sometimes the choir is used to create mystery, wonder, and awe. Sometimes it's uplifting and triumphant. Other times it's more sinister and aggressive, like when we hear this kind of sibilant chanting when Caesar first gets violent, protecting one of his keepers from an angry neighbor. Which is maybe reminiscent of this. we're back to Hans Zimmer again, The Dark Knight Rises from the following year. That film incidentally features the rebellion of an oppressed people too, and of course has Rise in the title. Coming up here is another suspenseful way Doyle works in the chorus. There's a suggestion of language here without it being totally discernible. We hear the choir do this drone when Caesar speaks his first word. It also includes a callback to the original that you'll recognize.
Take this stinking bar off me, you damn 38!
No!
It's like the choir is breathing the word into him. Let's listen again with just the music. Caesar's big defiance. The choir here is very guttural and primal, and it's a frightening way to use a vocal in a composition. At this moment, no means no more and signals the spark of the rebellion. Of all things, this approach actually reminds me of John Williams' arrangements for Emperor Palpatine in Star Wars. Unlike Caesar's more textural, sustaining note, Palpatine has an ominous and haunting melody to represent him. But it's the effect that links them. It feels dark and terrifying. Here's a closer example to the cue in Rise of the Planet of the Apes. It's from Revenge of the Sith, where Palpatine is corrupting Anakin by telling him an ancient Sith legend. John Williams gives the scene a flavor of the Emperor's theme, but we get this sustained throaty droning rather than anything melodic. There's something very old and terrible about the way this sounds. Speaking of John Williams and Star Wars, doesn't this cue from Rise of the Planet of the Apes sound like John Williams' suspense music? This track's called Caesar Says No. I don't know, it reminds me of that kind of mystery stuff that's always right after the main title crawl. Maybe it's that magic celeste sprinkled on top. So here's The Empire Strikes Back right after the crawl. Anyway, I think it's an homage to John Williams. Besides the choir, Doyle captures voice another way. He uses an ostrich egg ocarina, which, when blown, has a characteristic like a humming female voice. The parts played on it sound like a haunting lament. It's first introduced with Caesar's mother as she's captured in the jungle. So it reminds us of his mother, his roots, where he belongs. It's his identity crisis, his journey to find purpose. And the fact that it's not a human voice but sounds like one adds to that uncanny element of the apes that aren't human but are becoming like humans. Overall, the score is very opposite Jerry Goldsmith's, but choices like the egg as an instrument are actually very much up his alley. In fact, there are more Goldsmith-inspired ideas in Rise than you might imagine. Remember the cuica that Goldsmith used to make ape noises? Well, in Rise, Patrick Doyle was also moved to imitate apes in his score, but in a less direct way. Listen to him explain how he took inspiration from chimpanzee recordings.
I asked the guys on apes to give me all the sounds they had. They gave me the ape sounds, and one of the ape sounds, for example, goes, oh, 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 ow, ow, ow. Right? Now, I used that. It's a very simple motor figure. It became exact. It's a simple thing. That's a great monkey noise. That's a great rhythm. Let me use that.
So then this
becomes.
And I'll bring in Patrick Doyle's voice here. So those ape vocalizations become this bowed string ostinato, not literally sounding like apes, but influenced by their vocal rhythms.
So it's all over the film. It's everywhere. And there's things like, there's a kind of trombone or a brass figure. It was like the growl. I thought that's just a simple growl of bass trombone. Trombones, you know, it gives you a kind of, it gives you a wonderful kind of impetus to cut from scene, from short to short.
He'll imitate other animals, not just apes, like here where he was influenced by swarming insects as the apes in Full Rebellion swarm all over the city. Listen to the chromatic runs on the strings in the background. This effect is all over the score. We're about to listen to another music cue with these buzzing strings. Listen underneath the choir. I'm playing these bug sound effects so you can prepare your ears for the pitch you're supposed to be listening to. The famous classical example of this orchestra playing insects idea comes from an opera, The Tale of Tsar's Sultan, and a musical interlude called Flight of the Bumblebee by Nikolai Rimsky-Korsakov. In Flight of the Bumblebee, these uninterrupted runs of chromatic 16th notes are passed around the orchestra, giving the impression of frantic fluttering. Thank you. You might know it best as the jazzy trumpet-led theme for The Green Hornet by Al Hurt. By the way, another work that uses the orchestra to imitate insects, but in a terrifying rather than playful way, comes from avant-garde composer George Crumb. The first movement from his Black Angels Symphony entitled Night of the Electric Insects. There are other clever Goldsmith-like ideas in Rise. A contrabassoon or a contrabass clarinet emits an ultra-low growl when Caesar confronts an abusive caretaker. Like a truck idling. When the rebelling apes threaten an animal control officer, Patrick Doyle uses a klaxon-like sound to suggest prison alarms. The string section plays col legno, slapping their strings with the back of their bows, almost like warriors banging their weapons ready to strike. In interviews, Doyle's mentioned borrowing recordings of monkey cage rattles from the sound department and working them into his orchestration during the end battle. The idea being it subliminally reminds the audience of the apes' captivity. I think those recordings are time-stretched and processed and used right here. Listen for the digital metallic effect that textures the orchestra. This processing of sounds for music recalls the echoplex from the original movie. The blending of the electronic and the acoustic is in fact even more constant in Rise of the Planet of the Apes, speaking to this clash between the modern world and the natural world, science versus nature, man versus ape. This kind of sleek, stealthy underscore somewhat reminds me of the music for GoldenEye, Eric Serra's unique and divisive 007 score that was very inorganic and had these kind of synthesized metal impacts texturing the beat. We'll return to James Bond and Michael Giacchino scores, but in a completely different context. So in contrast to the 1968 score, Doyle brings back the tradition of the leitmotif, assigning elements of the story different themes. Goldsmith's music did have a few recurring melodies, but nothing that was overtly embracing the leitmotif in an old-fashioned way. Doyle's score for Rise of the Planet of the Apes has a few, and Giacchino's score for Dawn and War rely heavily on them. One big one in Rise is the Ape Rebellion theme. We first hear this when Buck the Gorilla is released from his cage by Caesar. It's big, commanding, and brassy. You'll hear the choir chanting and ape-like whispers underneath, too. The The style of this theme might be an homage to a period later in Jerry Goldsmith's career where he was writing brassy themes like this. Here's The Mummy from 1999, which is even playing in a similar scale to the Ape Rebellion theme. Small Soldiers. Congo, related to our ape theme. The 13th Warrior. A lot of these have vocal chanting too. And now I'll take us back to Rise of the Planet of the Apes. Here's the biggest statement of the rebellion theme, as the apes crawl and climb around the city. This is where we get everything ascending with the uprise, and where the rise from the title comes from. Caesar's theme is maybe the most important and often used in the film. We first hear it on that ostrich egg ocarina in the very beginning. The melody sounds soft and worried played on this instrument, again with a lament-like quality. Its first association is with Caesar's mother, Bright Eyes, named after Charlton Heston's character in the original. Caesar begins to question his place in the world. Is he a pet or a prisoner? Does he even belong in the human world? Again on the ocarina, we hear the theme rendered confused and almost whimpery. Thank you. Caesar eventually is thrown into an animal shelter where he's mistreated. He's cruelly blasted with a water hose to keep him in line, a nod to what the apes in the original did to Heston, which in turn was a reference to civil rights protesters. Here we finally get a strong and resilient version of the Caesar theme. Defiant, unsurrendering, it's got that sad heroism that defines his character. Illustrate a point to his fellow ape captive Maurice, Caesar easily snaps a long stick into pieces, then stacks the pieces in a bundle to show they're harder to break this way. This visual becomes the apes together strong mantra of the series. Manifesting this idea, the music stacks and staggers Caesar's theme between three different parts of the string section, the lower, the middle, and upper registers. During the escape, Caesar's killed a human, a cruel one, but there's still a hint of regret. The ocarina makes another return, but the arrangement is a little stronger now. It's supported by strings, suggesting he's not alone in this anymore. Ape Rebellion unfolds, Caesar's theme constantly plays, sometimes in full, other times in partial phrases. Always reminding us that he's the central figure in this uprising. Briefly there before it changes direction. A curious eastern sounding diversion here. We're going to get a couple of really grand statements of Caesar's theme in this section as the apes build towards a short-lived victory. Terrible thing happens. Buck the gorilla dies, sacrificing himself to protect Caesar. We get the most tragic and melodramatic cue in the whole movie as Caesar witnesses the cost of his uprising. This piece, Caesar and Buck, is probably the furthest you can get away from Jerry Goldsmith's score for the 68 film, as it's pure pathos. This cue, by the way, is on the soundtrack, but it appears it wasn't used fully in the film. It's heavily edited. The apes make their way into the woods to safety. Rise is specifically interested in the psychology of its characters, human and ape alike, and it asks for our understanding. Again, a full rejection of the original cynicism. Yes, the apes rebel, but it's not about dominating their human captors. There's a defiance in it, but also an earnest desire to be free of their suffering. The ground doesn't fall out, it doesn't swirl into a dark irony. Now in the wilderness with his fellow apes, Caesar says to Will,
"Caesar is..."
Caesar, now at his most self-assured, takes his place as the leader of the apes. The music here is noble, almost to the point of being patriotic. As they climb the tall trees, we get an ascendant theme associated with freedom, previously heard when Caesar first sees the woods. Then the ultimate statement of Caesar's theme. Resolved. Pretty impressive that the film and Doyle's score get us from here to here. Almost like how, at the end of that film, becomes This fanfare and strong resolution recalls that piece you'll remember from 2001 A Space Odyssey, the sunrise introduction to Strauss's Thus Spoke Zarathustra. Interestingly enough, that Strauss piece is based on the Nietzsche novel of the same name, which features human beings in transition between apes and his concept of the Superman. And to take it even further, that rising brass line is called the Dawn Motif and introduces the Dawn of Man section of Kubrick's movie. That's probably as good of a segue as we're going to get to our Dawn of the Planet of the Apes section. That does it for this episode of Keynotes. Join me on the next episode, Planet of the Apes Part 3, where we'll dive into both Michael Giacchino scores for the two Matt Reeves-helmed Planet of the Apes movies, Dawn of the Planet of the Apes and War for the Planet of the Apes. Before I go, I want to list off some sources that were essential to this episode. The article Simian Symphony, How Apes Music Evolved from Man by Scorekeeper, featured in Birth Movies Death magazine's Planet of the Apes issue, which gives a broad overview of the history of the apes' scores. This magazine is currently sold on mondotees.com and is full of great articles and amazing art, as are all Birth Movies Death magazine releases. The Rise of the Planet of the Apes Blu-ray featurette, Composing the Score with Patrick Doyle, where Doyle himself discusses the music. You can buy the Blu-ray on amazon.com. Finally, FilmTracks.com's editorial review of Rise of the Planet of the Apes helped me break down some of its themes. I'll link to this in the show notes. A special thanks to my very musical friends who understand music theory much more thoroughly than I do. Dustin Painter, Julie Popelka, and Linnea Snyder, who patiently field all my musical questions. You can find a Spotify playlist of all of the music tracks used in this episode on our Spotify account, Keynotes Podcast, one word, which is also linked in the show notes. I'd love to hear your thoughts on the podcast. Please subscribe, rate, review, or just leave a comment on iTunes or your respective podcast platform. Or you could email us at keynotespodcast@gmail.com. You can find Keynotes on Twitter at one word at Keynotes Podcast, and you can find me on Twitter at Nick Nylon. I'm also co-host of another podcast, a more casual discussion-based show called Spinoff, which tackles new film releases and connects them to other movies. Please check it out, which you can find on Twitter @spinoff_podcast. The link is in our bio. And finally, to play us out, here's the track Bright Eyes Escapes from the Rise of the Planet of the Apes soundtrack by Patrick Doyle. Once again, thanks for listening.